Today, we will hear from three people describing the unique way to get more affordable health care. I love what I heard. They were actually supposed to be our Austin speakers this month, but that didn't work out. So we said, why don't you just fill in now? Let me briefly introduce each one of them to you, and then I will mute myself and turn the program over to them. First, we're going to hear from Dr. Cliff Porter, who is a family medicine and urgent care physician and opened Texas Direct Medical Care in November of 2019. Previously, he was medical director for Community Care's two walk-in clinics in Austin. The Army brought Dr. Porter to Fort Hood in 2012, and he decided that Austin was the place to stay. He still serves part-time as a flight physician for the Texas Army National Guard's Aviation Brigade. Next, we have Angel Saucedo, and he's been an insurance agent for over 10 years. He is constantly looking for innovative ways to help employers who truly appreciate their staff. He's worked with a range of clients from startups to family-owned business and large corporations. He strives to understand and implement strategies that benefit both the employer and employees. And then finally, we have Nir Patel and his wife. Well, his wife's not with him, but he and his wife, Dr. Katrina Iqbal, opened their direct primary care practice called Direct Med DPC in 2015. Nir also owns Virtuous Benefits, a full-service health insurance agency that helps teach employers a DPC-driven healthcare strategy on how to take control of their healthcare costs. This proven strategy is being implemented by linking employers with thousands of DPC physician practices across the country. Gentlemen, the stage is now yours.
All right, well, thanks, Linda. I'm just gonna share my screen here real quick, and I'll get to the top here. It's only 12 slides, it's not too bad. I've been through those very long slideshows. The just in terms of disclosures, I run a DPC practice, and that's my incentive. I'm going to talk about some of the health insurance problems, other different types of plans. I'm not a broker. I'll leave that to Angel and Nir, and so I don't do referrals or any relation to that. So a lot of these plans have discounts to be a member of direct primary care clinics, so there's my incentive real quick. Yeah. So real quick, a lot of you are familiar with a lot of the problems. I'm going to highlight a few of the problems in healthcare and health insurance now to show you why direct primary care is such a good option and why I really enjoy practicing medicine this way. But as you know, the multiple causes, higher costs, and a lot of the poor access leads to such poor outcomes and increased demands in hospitalizations and ERs. So this is my quick outline for it. And then a couple slides of how bad things are, then we'll get to the light and happiness on the other side. Some of you might have seen this. This is from Kaiser, the increase in costs. And you see this dramatic increase in deductibles. This is a way to shift costs from healthcare organization insurance back on the patients. And this is one of the key issues. So here's another one for you. You'll see the dramatic increase in administrative burden in healthcare over the last 30, 40 years. There's a lot of reasons for this. Medicare rules drive a lot of this. Then there's things like HIPAA and EMTALA. For those not familiar with EMTALA, the Emergency Medicine Treatment and Labor Act, if someone shows up in an emergency room, they are bound to make certain the person is stabilized, large legal question what that means, before they make any decisions on transfer because of insurance costs. So again, it adds more administrative burden. And of course, there's just lots of people in there and gatekeepers. So commission sales, people who make money off premium for brokers and so forth, they have no interest in decreasing premiums. So they keep going up because they get a percentage. I know many have gone over the pharmacy benefit managers in your previous discussions. PBMs essentially are the gatekeepers for most pharmaceuticals to get access to retail pharmacy. And they're allowed to get what's called rebates, which is an exemption from the anti-kickback legislation. So pharmaceuticals have to pay access. This drives up cost as much as 40% in some studies. And then there's things that I live with every day. I don't as much in direct primary care, but everyone else does. Pre-authorizations, arguing with insurance and Medicare for, you know, get this MRI or that medicine approved. And hospitals' insurances are always competing with each other over who's paying. So sometimes it takes 6 months, 9 months, 18 months to get reimbursed for simple things through Medicare and other insurance. This last bit, capitated reimbursement. This has to do with seen in primary care, urgent care, and things like that, where you get paid by insurance or Medicare per person you see. So you have an incentive to do less and work through more people. So it turns healthcare into a treadmill. So, you know, the term literally means paid by the head, which is leads to the old inappropriate joke that decapitated reimbursement is what assassins get. So that's what the ninjas do. All right, oops, went too far. So results, bad medicine and higher costs. And just real quickly, with the higher premiums, the higher deductibles, and then the copay shifting the cost to patients, people don't want to go to the doctor unless they're really sick, because it's going to be short visits, going to cost them. The providers have to go faster to see more people to pay their bills. So it's when they come in, people are paying a high copay, they kind of expect to get a drug, even though 50% of the time I can treat most people without prescription drugs and do things over the counter or wait and see. But people want to get paid, or they want to get a drug if they're having to pay. And the other one is primary care and family medicine. I did my internship in emergency medicine, then my final residency in family medicine. And there's a lot of stuff I like to figure out and work out and work up the problems. But if you're under pressure 5-10 minutes to see a patient and then do charting, someone comes in and says, I got chest palpitations, my heart's racing. Ah, I recognize that to be a heart, refer to cardiology, next patient. It's quick, fast, I can bill and get paid. But most things, I have my EKG, I can figure out what drugs a person's on, if they have caffeine sensitivity, if it's a congenital issue, I can do all that. But if I only have 10, 15 minutes to see a patient, I can't. So those are problems that are driving a lot of the problems of primary care. And the other one is who's had the experience, and I imagine there's a lot of people nodding their head, they go in to see the doc, and the doc's sitting there banging away on the computer, more interested in charting than they are actually looking at you, the patient. So a lot of you have had that experience.
Yes.
And sorry to bring up painful memories to everyone, but that's it's what we do. So people aren't waiting to go see the doctor. They get less care, primary care. They're holding off going to see specialists because that's, again, more money. So end up people going to ER. Massachusetts has this experience when it's gotten longer to see a primary care doc, and they've actually increased the ER visits. A joke in ER and urgent care is that they're the primary care because people aren't going to see their primary care doc. So a great deal of frustration. So if people are delaying care until they're really sick, now you're going to have more serious illness. Diabetes not managed, hypertension not managed, things like that. Still eating worse medical care. So I'm making everything sound absolutely horrible. I'm sorry. So last slide of darkness. So an interesting phrase someone used, your health is a monopoly against yourself. What are you going to do to take care of your health? People profit off this. You guys remember Pharma Bro? He was the guy who tried to essentially corner the market on epinephrine pens. And so they went up to like $400 or $500. You can get them now through GoodRx for like $130, but still, epinephrine's cheap. It shouldn't be a problem. So what are your options for businesses or individuals with rising costs? Roughly, there's more than this, but there's the high deductible healthcare plans. But as you can see, through the ACA, it's $16,000 for a family for their deductible. So it's gotten incredibly expensive. So a lot of people just say it's not worth even having. Then, of course, you can just spend more and get a really good plan. Then there's the other ones, which Angel and Nir will talk about, self-pay, or you can just take gambling as just saying, no benefits, I'm just going to hope I don't get sick. And I see that amongst younger people. They just hope they don't get sick. So what does that mean for businesses? Financial drain. They want to keep employee retention. And I've known a number of people who left good companies because they don't have good benefits. They go work for a larger company with better benefits, even though they don't like the job. So you lose good people in smaller places. And the other one's time lost. This is an example a friend of mine used a couple months ago when there was such thing as kids going to school. He needed a doctor's note for his daughter who had a simple virus, wanted her to keep her home, and just needed a doctor's note sent to the school saying keeping her home from school. Do you guys remember when you send kids to school? That was a while ago, but the pediatrician's office refused. They said the The child has to be brought in, has to be evaluated before we can send a note to the school. My friend was somewhat outraged. He thought, what a crappy doctor's office. No, they had to bill. They get no money for spending the time to send a note to the doctor's office. So they wanted the dad to take time off from work, take the daughter, get the billing so they can bill insurance. My practice doesn't work that way. I can do that. It's the nice thing about it. And the worsening medical care. So new options. So here's more good stuff for you. So this, let me explain direct primary care. And during this part, if you have questions, stop and ask as we go through. So direct primary care basically is a foundation for the better care combined with major medical. I don't have an ICU or a brain surgery suite in the back office there. I don't do that. So for the larger things, we know it's catastrophic insurance. Combined with this, we can take care of most things. And actually drop costs enormously, sometimes over half, sometimes as much as 75% for some people. So let me explain a little bit what DPC is. In a nutshell, you pay a monthly membership fee, and then you get all the primary and urgent care that you need that we're capable of doing. Again, I don't do brain surgery. For those who remember Young Frankenstein, Dr. Frankenstein was my mentor. And if you haven't seen the movie, you should go back. It's part of your education. It's cultural American. But the monthly membership takes money off the table. So because I don't do insurance or Medicare, I don't bill them, I don't have any of the administrative burden. My overhead is extremely low. I don't need a large clinic with high volumes of people. I bypass the larger medical suppliers who have to, are competing with insurance and Medicare. And so my costs are tremendously cheap. I'll show some examples in a minute. So again, the example of the dad who needed a school note. Just call my phlebotomist and medical assistant. I had one employee, and she just send a note to the school and we're done. If someone needs, they have asthma and their asthma is getting a little worse, they need a refill for a nebulizer, maybe a short course of prednisone. If I know the patient, we can do that by just text. If I think they have a fever and a cough and I need to listen to their lungs or maybe need a steroid shot, then I'll bring them in. So I combine inpatient clinic with telemedicine. We've always done this. So it makes it far easier, and you can just do a convenient what's needed, not based on co-pays, not based on billing, just based on medical care, because we've taken money off the table. It's such a better way to practice medicine. It actually makes it medicine fun again. And with the number of people, it's anywhere from 600 to 800 is the population panel that I'd have. We cover for each other after hours and weekends. So I don't make my clinic too far from my house. And if I'm on vacation, other direct primary care clinics, we actually cover for each other. So one's on vacation, the other one doesn't.
You have your office, and is that because when you say clinic, this is your private office space?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and with Igor in the back. Sorry, I went right back to Young Frankenstein references. But there's about 12 of us in the Austin area. And there's something called DPC Frontier Mapper, dpcfrontier.com. It actually has a list of all the direct primary care clinics in the United States. And there's about 1,500 now, I think. Awesome. They're all over. So you can actually have a look at that. And let me go to the next slide. Here's some of the cost savings. I work with LabCorp and some with CPO. So I make a deal with LabCorp straight. I pay them directly. They pay me direct, or they bill me directly. They don't have to deal with insurance or Medicare, and I get wholesale cost on labs. So lipids, cholesterol, $2.80. Complete blood count, A1C, $2.50 to $3.50. On the side there is, this is actually a LabCorp bill for me, for TRICARE Humana. Humana manages it. So I need my cholesterol check because I'm slightly over the age of 21. And lipids and lipoprotein A, just cardiac risk factor, charged over almost $220. My copay was $11.37. Through my clinic, through LabCorp, those two tests cost $10. So I got cheated out of $1.37. What happens is all that extra billing and extra cost goes to pay for all the infrastructure and the constant conflict and time that the healthcare delivery agencies, LabCorp hospitals, have to do to build insurance. So labs, I get ridiculously cheap. Now prescriptions, going back to the PBMs, they quite often negotiate with the pharmaceuticals that generics sometimes, although they cost less than the copay, because they have to pay the PBM's access, the copay that some people pay through their insurance is more than the cost of the generic directly from the manufacturer. So GoodRx, for example, is one of those online places where you can get actually direct costs. So epinephrine pens, which through some people's insurance, will cost $300-$400. It used to be as much as $500. Through GoodRx, you can get it for $120. Here's something that'll annoy you. It's jumping down to the bottom of the screen. Is epinephrine pens is 0.3 milligrams each. You get two in a package, 0.6. I get a whole milligram for $13.90. So if I could actually take it, put it in a pre-filled syringe, put in a pre-filled syringe carrying case, I could hand it to a patient for $7 direct cost. I can't do that currently in Texas because we don't allow direct dispensing. We're trying to get that changed through the legislature. Everyone vote for my ideas. But then I can actually direct dispense that to patients and save them just enormous amount of money every year. Imaging, again, same thing like with LabCorp. I do direct pay. So several places around town, I can get x-rays cheap. And MRIs, there's a guy starting one up in Round Rock where he's changed the algorithm to go from 30 minutes to an MRI to 5 to 10 minutes to do an MRI. Now you can do more MRIs, your costs go down, and you can bring the cost down from an MRI from $2,000 through a high deductible insurance plan for like a brain MRI for bad migraines. You just got to rule out bad things. To now $200. That's promised in the next month or two. I can get it for $450 in downtown Austin near the Heart Hospital. So far cheaper by doing direct costs. You'll also see on their direct costs, like walking boots for people with bad sprains or minor fractures, you can get those $300, $400 through an orthopedist. They have to pay for their costs and their infrastructure. They cost me direct $38 through a supplier, Advantage Medical in San Antonio, for all my San Antonio colleagues. And then I can do all that cheaper. If one of my patients throws out their back, they need a steroid injection for their knees or shoulders, migraines, all those things, those direct injection costs cost me about $5 to $7 each, sometimes cheaper. So I just throw those in as part of the membership fee. So you see how I'm just driving down costs tremendously by avoiding all this infrastructure. And so now, as I said, that final point, copays cover basic costs, extra bucks go to the infrastructure.
Hey Cliff, it's near. Yeah. There's a question on the chat that's asking, do you offer immunizations?
I'm working on doing that directly through my office. I have to do a little training that I can get it cheap through the county. The county, Travis County, has two locations south and north that do them for $10 each. So quite often we'll just coordinate through county agencies to get those vaccinations. Kids need vaccinations.
Dr. Porter, so I know you were just answering about the immunizations. So if you have a family that comes in and does like annual checkups and things like that, and the kids need their immunizations, how do you handle that as with regards to the kiddos? And especially if they come in at different times.
Well, that's part of a general overview of someone's health. You look at the screenings they should do, the vaccinations they need, regardless of the age. Of course, kids need more. But you know, tetanus and pneumococcal, all these different ones. Those ones, we look at different places we can get them. Some health share and insurances, the catastrophic part, actually cover those. And then they can be done at CVS, Walgreens, HEB, wherever. Or we can do it through the county for people who don't have insurance or don't have health share plans. So there's a variety of ways, depending on who they are, so we can make it cheap and you're not paying the high cost of a direct cost of vaccination.
And I'll just add to that. I'll just add to that a little bit. In our practice, we're also kind of working deals with other pediatric offices that are insurance based to provide us. It's really the child vaccinations that are the issue. You know, 7 years and under, because they have high shelf life. They have a low shelf life and they're expensive. And we, as direct primary carers, don't do enough volume of pediatrics to support keeping those in our office. So we're working with other pediatric offices to where, like my practice in Lakeway, we have a pediatric office that's nearby that sells us those vaccinations, onesie, twosie, at cost. And then we can administer them to our patients. There are other offices, like there's one in Westlake that, you know, we can just send our patients there. They have a very reasonable cash rate for the office visit fee and then for the immunizations as well.
Yeah, so in a nutshell, there's a variety of ways we find to work around it so we can get those costs down. So bypassing barriers and gatekeepers, as we've just been discussing. So what does this all mean in terms of the direct practice of medicine? As I mentioned before, the guys who are too busy, they don't have time to work up things. I can. So I had a case of the lady with palpitations. I use a heart example. It just turned out in her mid-30s, went through her medications and all the rest of it. It's caffeine sensitivity. Go decaf on your cappuccinos. Things like that. So many referrals less because I can work it up. So I'm talking with a person right now who's thinking about joining my practice who doesn't have insurance. She has some complex dermatology issues. Well, the problem isn't the complexity of the pathology. The problem is the complexity of the procedure. She needs a bunch of different injections. Well, I can probably get those a lot cheaper than the insurance-based dermatology practice, which has much higher overhead costs. So I might be able to save her almost half, if not more. ER visits. I had a young lady, 18 months, who had a little minor elbow injury on the weekend, and mom was thought, my God, did we have to go over to the ER? It had been $2,000 for what I needed to do was basically just have a quick look, educate mom on the things to work on for complexities and just a little ibuprofen. Because they're part of the service, they paid nothing. Versus they went to the ER, it would cost them a great deal of money. This is how you lower demands on premiums on insurance plans. Again, less hospitalizations. And then also, once the people get over that they have to pay a membership fee, it's not like some of the more expensive concierge systems, but once they have the membership, the fear of talking to me goes away. So people can call me for medical advice on rather and not have to worry about copay. So, gee, should I take this vitamin? Usually not. You know, some vitamins, yes, most no. So because of opting this using direct primary care as a foundation, then allowing you, you know, better control the medical care, not management like the HMOs, but actually direct control someone's medical care and take care of it right in the front, you can dramatically reduce higher cost demands like ERs and hospitalizations. So some companies have saved a lot of money. So move to the next one. So this example, let's give you a couple numbers here of some real numbers. And I put this on my website, some of these studies, so you see the real numbers that business can actually save. And Near and Angel talk about more. DeSoto Hospital in Florida, semi-rural hospital, had about 150 or so employees, 250 or so, including family members. They adopted a model which was essentially self or level funded based on direct primary care. And about two-thirds of the people adopted and their cost dropped over half, went over a little over $2 million to just under $1 million in a single year. And you look at the chart there, you see the medical claims for direct primary care versus non-direct primary care is a little higher. That's because I can do more. But you see, as you get right down to the bottom, adjusted chronic ER, especially in the adjusted chronic conditions, the cost just drops dramatically. We see this particularly with diabetes. Once diabetes is well controlled, you don't have complications. And then you don't have to go to the ER for a variety of things, dialysis and so forth. The one at the bottom there, Burton Plumbing in Nebraska, their guys were waiting too long, waiting for them to get sick before they'd actually go, and they'd all go to the ER essentially for their primary care. The old joke is men don't go to the hospital unless something's really bad's going on, or that, you know, their wife or girlfriend's got both paws right in the center of their back pushing them in to see the doctor. I got a question there? No. Little background. So what about catastrophic coverage? And this is the second to last slide there for me. So there's a variety of ways to do this. One is health savings account and flexible savings accounts that people can use pre-tax dollars to pay for their medical care. And they're working on the clarification about whether they can use HSA, FSA accounts to pay for membership. That's a tax question, and I'm not a CPA. I hire a CPA. So that's a question asked, but some people are looking at doing that. Then there's the health cost sharing plans. Some of you are familiar with these. There's like Christian Health Share Ministries is a well-known one, Medishare. Then there's non-religious ones like Sedera, Zion. And basically, it's kind of a co-op, and people basically share their costs it's managed, and they work with healthcare organizations, hospitals and such, for direct cost. An example would be knee surgeries. And a hospital will bill $120,000, $130,000, anywhere from $70,000 to $150,000 for a total knee replacement. That can be done for cash through hospitals and freestanding surgery centers. There's one in Austin for 20. So you drop the cost dramatically because, again, it's not insurance and hospitals fighting over money. You've gone direct cost and you can actually reduce that cost significantly. So the cost health sharing plans can be often quite a bit cheaper. They do require people to sign an agreement that they're going to, it's clean living. So if you're signing up for a health share plan and they say, yep, I don't smoke dope and do heroin and drive my car 150 miles an hour, they say, great, sign up. You promised clean living. But if you go do that and end up in the ER, you're kind of on your own. So that's the check. So if you're mainlining heroin and cocaine, don't do that. Seeing who's listening out there. Now there's some individualized insurance plans like Decent Insurance, which is started in Austin by a tech guy in San Francisco whose parents were physicians. He requires people to sign up with a direct primary care clinic as a part of the membership because we reduce premiums, we reduce claims. So he can actually offer a better insurance. It's actual insurance, not a health share plan. Then of course there's ACA plans. The last one, other chats are going to talk about is businesses and individuals can look at self or level funded, more active management using different ways where they actually don't use a traditional insurance company. They do it themselves to manage the claim process because they're not making their money on premiums. We make our money on the membership. So then you can reduce your cost tremendously and not giving money to a third party insurance group. Again, and all these things, the last slide here is, starting with direct primary care, it's just such a far better way to practice medicine. And because I can do that, I can lower costs tremendously and do better care. So the interesting thing is, so some people who have a health share plan combined with a direct primary care plan, they're technically uninsured, but have far better health care than many people who might be covered on one of the big ones. So, and then the other options, of course, direct primary care as a base for off-the-shelf catastrophic plan, Decent Insurance, and ACA plan, something like that. And then the last one the other guys are going to talk about is, customized level funded plans. And when you start talking about level funded plans, my eyes glaze over. I'm better at brain surgery. So I'll take interested in some other questions on that because a lot of people's experience with medicine is very personal. So sometimes how this fits in, I can explain with individual scenarios a lot easier. Or it was a perfect presentation.
Is this a fairly new concept? How long has
In one sense, you're right. It is. It's fairly new. In another sense, it's old school medicine. So, Nears, he and his wife have been doing about 5-6 years. Some guys have been doing as much as 10-15, but it's really taken off in the last 3-4 years. I opened up about 7 months ago. I just learned about this whole process, direct primary care. I know about concierge, but direct primary care, I actually learned about ago, about January of last year. I looked into it and said, this is great. I'm going to do it this way. But in many ways, it's old school medicine. I'll get paid in barter too. I'll take chickens since I have to grow my own garden. Here's a good question. How does this work for patients with conditions requiring expensive medications like Remicade? So a lot of the stuff we can get direct costs, it's a lot cheaper, but Remicade is a bloody expensive medication. I have one patient who's on it. This is where the health share plans or the ACA plan or high deductible plans are beneficial because they'll quite often have, you'll meet a certain level and then they'll kick in and pay for those. So this is where what I do is most things, but the higher expensive new things, this is where you need a backup plan, either catastrophic or other plan. Or even a prescription plan with those. The health share plans tend to have, they're not deductibles. They call them initial unshared amount and then shared amount because they're not insurance, so they can't use the same terms. But it's very similar. And they range from $500 to $5,000 for a whole family. Now, once you've met that unshared amount, then a drug like Remicade, and some of these range $5,000 to $10,000 a year or more, then you actually meet that cost and you can actually take care of all that. typical membership costs. We're roughly all about the same. I charge $40 for a kid, $80 for an adult, and then $110 over 61 because we have slightly more medical issues as we get beyond the age of 21. And then I do family plans and like half for a spouse, and you know, more children do half price, and then sort of combine it. So we're on roughly about $200 for a family. And then another thing on prescriptions, because that's an important one. GoodRx, look at GoodRx. You'll see things are a lot cheaper. And I do get samples from some people. But most things that I do in primary care and urgent care, I can get generic medications, and older medications are just fine. Like high blood pressure, there's a bunch of fancy new stuff, but we got 5 or 6 major classes of medication, and a lot of them work well depending on the individual. So people can spend $3 to $5 a month on chronic medications.
Cliff, there's a question in the chat. What are the typical membership costs?
Oh, just going there. So per month, $80 for an adult, and then $200 for a family. Those generally what it costs. The additional things are things that I don't cover under that are what we call durable hardware, like crutches and walking boots. I get those pretty cheap, $15 for crutches. X-rays, I do direct pass-through. So anything I'm charged, the patient sees. So $50 for an X-ray. And direct labs, you know, those are usually $3 to $5 each.
Do you do X-rays in your office?
No, I would like to, but they cost $70,000. I'd need more square footage. It's a really cool toy, and I can't justify it. Oh, see, spending $50, you know, in several different places around Austin, I don't need an X-ray. I'm going to need a comfort sound because it's $5,000, and I can see the X-rays I can see fractures on ultrasound. I'm going to get one of those in a couple months.
No, I was just asking if that's in-house or you send them out.
Some larger direct primary care clinics that have several different providers working for them in a location where X-rays are harder, they have done that. But it's so cheap to get places around town. For example, I had a case where in Steiner Ranch, if some people know where that is, but a twisted foot. I sent them over to a local place to get the X-ray done. Then they came to my office, and then we looked at the X-ray ourselves. So they didn't have to come see me. Then I send them for X-ray. Then they come back. So I just directly that way, and then I can pull up the X-ray on my laptop, and we save everyone time and distance. So okay. The gold-plated X-ray would be a really cool toy, but $100.
So when are you going to open in San Antonio?
When am I moving to San Antonio? There's several people in San Antonio already. Interesting thing is, Nir and I've been chatting about this, expanding the footprint of direct primary care. I have a couple providers who used to work for me who want to join. I need a few more patients, and then I'd be looking between, there's not a good direct primary care clinic from south of downtown 6th Street all the way until you get to New Braunfels. So a couple friends of mine live in South Austin area, and then I might sponsor clinics to open up for them. I'll set it up for them, but I get a cut.
Well, South Austin is just a suburb to us, so, you know, it's fine.
I was just what Monica just put in the chat is what I was going to say. So there's a link in the chat that shows you every direct primary care practice across the country. And all the ones in the green dots on this link are the ones that are the pure, genuine direct primary care practice.
I see another question there on telehealth. Telehealth is embedded in what we do. And I saw the note on there, Monica's has a practice up in Northwest Austin. So we talk all the time. The telemedicine is part of this. And in fact, it's integrated better than a lot of other telemedicines because telehealth is really good for things that could be handled without direct physical exam, particularly if you know the patient. But a lot of telehealth through urgent care and so forth, all the person can do, especially the remote, it has its place, but all I can do is like order a Z-Pak and prednisone, it seems. But if I know the person, I can make a better judgment. And then if I need to see him, then we just coordinate when they can come by and see me, and I've actually done house calls. If it's on the way home from work, I'll swing by their house and have a listen to their lungs if I'm worried about a cough or something else like that. And then we can sort of save a lot of time that way. An example is a 2-year-old who had this is an example, screw things up. Dad has good insurance through his company, but as soon as he has his children, it goes up three times. So I, his wife and two kids, they're on Christian Health Share Ministries, and I see the two kids for $80 a month, and I get to go play with two little boys, which is fun. But the two-year-old had a cold a couple days ago. A couple days later, he breaks out in this big bright red rash on his stomach. It's a viral exanthem. It's harmless. But mom and I texted back and told her what the symptoms are. I educated her on this is just a rash that comes after a cold. If he has a fever, he's feeling worse, doesn't all the rest of it, then talk to me. Mom's better educated. She knows what to look for. She knows her son better than I do. And then we can make a mutual decision. Do I need to see him, or we just do it by telehealth? So it's far, far better way to do things.
I'm going to pop in right now. We've got about 15 minutes left and we have two more speakers, Cliff. So I'm thinking that we probably ought to move on. And then people, you can answer some of the additional questions in the chat, okay? Or pop in as they're speaking. So who's next?
That's okay. Typically the direct primary care doctor is way more popular than the insurance guy, which is what I am. And typically after I follow Dr. Border or any other DPC, I get asked, well, this is great, but how does it work with my insurance? Or if you're an employer, how do I offer this? Do I still have to offer both? And so that's what I'm going to be touching on. So Malcolm, if you can cue up some of the slides that we'll be talking about. And even though Dr. Porter mentioned a little bit about it, I always try to go back and unravel why health insurance is so expensive. And you have to follow where your claim dollars are going, because if you don't understand where your money is going, then you're either going to keep doing the same thing over again, or you're just going to feel powerless about it. So the chart that you see here is a very simple chart that where your premium dollars tend to go, and this is if you have health insurance, fully insured health insurance, hospital care, 32%, waste, 30%, surgery is about 15%, prescriptions, 13%, and physicians about 10%. So that is where all your the money that you're paying to every month into your health insurance, a lot of that goes. And as you can see, a big chunk is waste. And so you think, well, how is my money being wasted? There's nothing I pay for that I want it to just waste. A lot of that is errors in billing or errors in procedures. One of the things that we've uncovered as we, over the past couple of years, discovered this is a lot of doctors and surgeons are incentivized to perform surgeries. A lot of doctors are incentivized to have more labs, more imaging, more prescriptions, because that's how their compensation works, or that's how they're evaluated. So if you think about that for a second and say, well, I go get help because I want to feel better, not necessarily because I want you to keep billing my insurance, right? Or unnecessarily billing the insurance. So a lot of that goes into that category. And when you think of just the sheer volume of claims, whether it be on the physician side, hospital side, or the insurance side, the ones that are actually managing it, there's bound to be errors. One of the things in researching that I thought was funny or difficult to believe is an insurance company paid three circumcision procedures on the same patient in the same week. And you think to yourself, that couldn't have happened, or somebody just had a horrible week. And so that's one of the errors that you see, or it could be fraud, that unless you're checking that constantly or have some sort of advocate that's looking at that for you, you're going to be throwing money away and nothing's going to be done about it. Your insurance is simply going to go up. The other part of why hospital is so, if you want to go back just one more, why hospital is such a big chunk goes back to what Dr. Porter mentioned. When someone doesn't have good access to a primary care physician, and so what I mean by good access is they don't have to wait for sometimes to get on their calendar. They have a high copay. They actually get to spend time with their doctor. Because if you talk about the typical experience of 5 minutes in and here's a couple pills and go out the door, most people don't want to go through that. So when I mean when you have access to a physician, that's when you have access to a direct primary care. Then a lot of those hospitalizations get shifted, or those ER visits get shifted, and you're not spending as high of your premium dollars on that. So it's important as an employer to understand where your money is going. And really, the number one thing that I suggest is to switch from that fully insured plan to either a level funded or a self-funded arrangement. And I'll touch a little bit about that because not everybody knows what that means. fully insured health insurance is when you pay a premium to a health insurance company. They don't ask any health questions. They don't tell you how your money is being spent. You have no say in the matter of what facilities to go to. You're kind of tied to a network. And it's a kind of take it or leave it situation. And so that's what for many years we all been accustomed to. And we like that because the money was, or the premiums were low and we didn't get hit with increases. But as we've seen over the past 10, 20 years, that has not been the case. It keeps going up and up, and fully insured now has become just a black hole that you just pay your premiums every month. Whether you use it or not, it doesn't matter. You're paying somebody else's medical cost. So switching from that arrangement from fully insured to now a level funded or a self-funded arrangement allows you to take control back, allows you to now say, okay, well, I want to have a line of sight of how my money is being spent. And I want to actually have a little bit of control on where that dollar is being used. And so that kind of leads to this, to the next slide. And this is just, it's really all over the place. But essentially what it is claims data taken out of 41 million claims. And the top part of the chart is high quality facilities or high performance facilities. And that means facilities that either have low errors being committed, a low rate of accidents or infections, or even a low rate of readmissions. So in other sense, there's some sort of standard to these facilities that actually they're doing a great job at taking care of their patients, and the data proves it. The bottom part of the section is focused on cost. So whether it be a low cost or a higher cost. So basically what you're looking at is claims have no correlation between quality and cost. And I always give the example of a $20 hamburger. If you were to go to a sit-down restaurant and you ordered a $20 hamburger, you expect a different quality for it. You know, you expect maybe the brown beef to be made into the patty that day, for it to be fresh, ingredients to be high quality, and obviously the taste to be better. But if they were to serve you the same hamburger that you get at a fast food place, you'd say, I'm not paying for that. I'm not paying, that's not worth $20. Right? Or that's worth a dollar. And so that's a lot of what happens in healthcare. Just because you're paying more doesn't mean that you're actually getting better care. A lot of times you're paying more for low quality or mediocre quality. And so it's important to understand the facilities that you go to. And that's why we always recommend a concierge service, or even the doctors, as you heard Dr. Porter, they're very familiar with facilities in their area, and they know who to recommend you to. Or most of them have even negotiated cash pricings for like a specialist or x-ray imaging. And so we help mitigate all that and give your employees the power that a consumer wants. You know, if you think about when you buy a car or when you buy clothes, you shop around, you look for the highest quality at the lowest price. But in health insurance, specifically a fully insured plan, you actually, your hands are tied. You don't have access to that. The next slide that I'll show is a little bit of what we try to educate. And it might be a little shocking to some here in Austin. So we have two of the major hospitals that kind of everybody knows. And you can look at the website down below. And it's really gives you a grade to that hospital. A lot of times when you are thinking about a procedure or being recommended, when you say, well, my friends have gone there, my family's gone there, that's kind of why I go there. But it's important to look at the rating, because they may have a high infection rate, have a high error rate, readmission rate. It's important to really understand what you're paying for. And so again, we use the data that's provided to kind of steer patients and steer employees to say, look, why don't you go to a higher quality facility, or your DPC is gonna steer you there and say, look, let's use your money wisely instead of just going and spending and not having any accountability towards it. Which is another thing we implement in an employer plan. There has to be some accountability with employees and how they spend their healthcare dollars. Because if you think about a health insurance card, it's really a no limit credit card. And so if you give somebody a no limit credit, do you really think they're going to care how much something costs, or they're going to try to, you know, be a smart consumer and take their dollar further? Typically not. And so that's where, again, the strategy that we always recommend is let's put some accountability in there, which, again, leads us to our following slide, which is kind of an example of, well, what happens? Give me a real life scenario. One of them is, that I'll highlight is something fairly common for a little older folks is a knee replacement. And so as you can see, the first category is kind of the average cost of a knee replacement in the state of Texas. And even though that just for the knee replacement, that doesn't always include the anesthesiologist, the facility fee sometimes, the post-op visit that you have to do or the follow-ups, that is purely just for the procedure. But if you look at organizations like Texas Free Market Surgery or here in Lakeway, Move Health, they can do the same procedure for half the price. And so you think to yourself, well, how is that even possible? And this is something that surgeons have kind of educated me on over the past couple of years. When a surgeon performs a procedure at a hospital, 80% of the cost goes to the hospital. And most surgeons say, well, the outcome of that surgery, I would say, is 80% on them. You know, so why is the surgeon not kind of being compensated? And that's why they've started organizations or smaller surgical centers that are high quality, that have a high success rate, and are half as much. So we educate your employees or someone who is looking at alternative and say, look, if you go to some of these facilities, guess what? We'll eliminate your deductible, we'll eliminate your copay or your out-of-pocket costs, because not only are you getting better care, you're saving the healthcare dollars that are being spent. So it's not, you know, some people try to compare it to like an HMO where we're kind of directing care, but the biggest difference that I say is we're actually giving you better quality. And you can go see these facilities, and even the DPCs here, Dr. Porter and Katrina Yekwell, who I work with a lot, they recommend them because they know and they see the quality that they are. So that's just, and you see a couple other procedures there. And the next slide will kind of show you also the difference of what's included in that price. It's really everything's included in those procedures. So the pre-op, the surgeon, the team, the anesthesiologist, the facility, the pathology, durable medical equipment, the post-op care, the rehabilitation, everything's included. So again, it's giving your employee a better experience while they're at the doctor's or while they're getting a procedure, instead of just letting them take that unlimited credit card and go wherever they want, where, you know, as the data has shown, there's more errors, there's not as good success rates, and they're really just kind of going blind into a situation. And the other thing that I'll point out from both facilities like this is their surgeons are not incentivized financially to actually perform more surgeries. You know, there's not a quota that they have to hit. There's not a dollar amount that they have to generate for their practice. They just, a lot of times people are surprised that they don't recommend a procedure. And they say, well, I went to two other surgeons that do. And they usually say, well, they probably work for a larger hospital or a larger practice where they have to perform those procedures, because if not, you know, it hurts their revenue. They're trying to do the best thing for you, much like the direct primary care doctors, just like Dr. Porter, that are not letting financial incentives dictate the way they practice medicine. And so the last slide kind of highlights at all the plans that we recommend at the core, and you understood why, the core of that is direct primary care memberships. And Nir and I work almost on the daily, and we connect with about 2,000 DPCs across the country. They're all having the same concept. They're tired of seeing high volume of patients being forced to practice medicine outside of what they went to medical school for, letting insurance companies dictate them. And so that's why it's so important for each one of your employees to have a direct partnership. Force them. A lot of times, you know, somebody says, well, I like my doctor, I don't want to leave them. So we do give them that option. But we do ask them to, you know, hold their own doctors accountable. Say, well, what is the cash price to come see you? You know, if I keep my current insurance, you know, I pay $400 or $500 a month, I only use it to come see you, that relationship is costing me about $5,000 or $6,000 a year. How about if I just pay you a cash price per visit? So it's important to hold those accountable from a financial side and say, look, don't just add to the problem, help us solve it. So that's a lot of the things that both Nir and myself do, is implement these strategies to unravel kind of what's going on and really tackle it from each category and help your employees be healthier, but also overall save on the cost. So Nir, if you want to touch on something, I think we have some questions.
Sure. Does anyone have any questions? Another perfect presentation.
Yes.
So I do have a quick question, because this sounds too good to be true. Like, saving money on healthcare seems like, heck, we should all be signing up to do this. But I can certainly see where families, I can certainly see where people are going to be hesitant. Sounds like the latest and the greatest, right? Mm-hmm. And I can see where people have a fear, a certain amount of fear in changing their habits, because that's not the way you've been doing it, or you mm-hmm. were raised, or the facts that you had. So, you know, what do you tell people when you get them in and they have, like, that sounds great, but what if, I mean, what do you tell people?
That's so, go for it, Cliff.
Well, just real quick, I mean, I get that question all the time. And so quite often I have to explain how it works in their individual situations. But and a lot of people say this, and I got this from them. This is old school medicine again. We're getting rid of the barriers, and we're able to practice medicine directly. And this is how we financially pay for it, through the membership. And then you have the other plans for the major medical catastrophics. Angel?
So for my side, what I always see is either the current advisor, whether it be a broker or whoever the company uses, hasn't really understand the process, and so they're kind of pushing back on it. And right. Unfortunately, they're getting bad advice, right? But because they're either a friend or they've had that relationship for a long time, that's one of the first gatekeepers that, you know, is kind of holding this off. Another thing that, as you mentioned, because it's new, they want to understand the process. When all of a sudden you're talking about eliminating a network, you know, most people, you see that as I want to be able to know who I go to. I want to go to a hospital facility and say, here's my insurance card. Do you take it? They want to hear yes. That change in itself, you have to kind of get them, build them up in confidence. And it takes a courageous employer, because the ones that have done it have not only seen the savings, they've also seen just how much healthier their employees are and happier. But it does take that education, and that's why we're doing, you know, things like this. Once people understand it, you're seeing a trend of it switching, but you're really going to see it more and more.
I have a question, unless somebody, well, are you going primarily after larger companies, say like self-insured employers? I would think that they would especially be interested in this, trying to lower the cost of their insurance. So who goes for it the quickest?
So interestingly enough, right now we're having success with smaller employers. Okay. No, they really don't, they don't want the big broker agency that has the downtown office and, you know, has all the bells and whistles. They want results, and they want something that's going to help their employees. And typically a smaller employer, what I have found over the years, they have a much closer connection with their employees. So they know the individual who had the baby, they know the individual who went through a serious illness. And so they're willing to try something that's better for them.
Okay.
I've also, a three-person one, I treated their one employee, this one couple, like a part of the family. So I did a family plan like that for them. Mm-hmm.
The larger employers, what right now some are hesitant is, they're kind of afraid of the backlash. They're saying, well, if we start changing everybody's viewpoint of insurance, well, what's going to happen? But again, it's educating both them and the employees on how to do it. But we are seeing a big trend that smaller employers are willing to take that leap and see the results.
I could see maybe offering one or the other, and that the employees would have the option of selecting what they want.
That's mm-hmm. what DeSoto did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I know a lot of big companies have gone to more, you know, self-insured type scenario. My question for you is, always the concern about, you know, someone that's has some serious underlying condition, you know, the major medical. I mean, that's really what we're all worried about. I mean, just the day-to-day stuff. I mean, you just kind of grin and bear it. But, you know, diabetes, heart, cancer, you know, how is it handled?
Yeah, this is where I can do quite a bit. I know there's a lot of time and stuff, and it's we need to be in a conference room having lunch. The primary care doctor is supposed to be the quarterback of health, and we're not, because we're pressured under time. I can be. So I can coordinate between specialists. Todd had a question like this earlier too. I can actually coordinate that healthcare, and along with that health share plan, the level funded plan, the other ones that's gonna take care of the big stuff. Like I have patients with leukemia and I manage their labs and their drugs that the would cost a lot through the oncology office. And then I do the coordination with perhaps the cardiologist for tox effects and so forth. So I can actually coordinate all that with the catastrophic plan for those higher costs. Then we can actually achieve a better plan for the care. I'm doing it. The oncologist isn't going to be necessarily the quarterback. The cardiologist isn't going to be it. I can bring all those teams together. So it actually does help us with those more catastrophic illnesses. Well, so this is where examples you have to explain. Sorry, go ahead, Brian.
I guess maybe that the potential liability in the insurance to be able to cover, you know, the bigger catastrophic things, not the data. No, I realize you've got to be the quarterback, and you know, especially the elderly people, and you know, coordinating meds and this and all that. I get that. I think the fear that most people would have is like, okay, would I be covered if I've got a heart attack or cancer or you know something like that?
That's true for all the catastrophic plans. Yeah, their insurance or the health share plans, you know, some people with traditional insurance are refused. So that's where I find some of these other level funded plans, health share plans, and in fact, they are in fact far better at actually covering issues. But again, you know, you never know until these things happen. Or is there some clause in the contract you miss? And that, unfortunately, that fear is you have to get in and read the contract.
Well, that's all we have to do. It's for the.
And I'll add to that. It's interesting thinking of a catastrophic kind of worst case scenario. Regardless of whatever insurance you have, in an emergent situation, any facility, any doctor, any ER has to take you, regardless of your insurance. So there's really no fear there of what happens if all of a sudden I'm in this emergent situation and they won't take me. So what we do on the back end is we start, and now once you get the bill, we're going to use our advocates to actually negotiate that down. And it's interesting because sometimes people fear balance billing or having to go to court. We have all the legal service to kind of handle that. And one of the things that I always reassure people is, number one, we're being co-fiduciaries on whatever financial burden you have from hospitalization. So we're not just leaving you high and dry. The second thing is, if a hospital or a large facility takes you to court, then number one, they have to prove what they're charging. And this is a big issue right now with surprise billing and transparency. Last time there was a few attorneys, I wonder if there's any attorney on the call.
But there's a CPA. There is an attorney here.
When you go to court, if for example, they're trying to sue you for a cost, you say, well, I didn't know the cost up front. Hospitals don't show their pricing up front. So how can you take me to court and say I owe you money when I wasn't told the pricing ahead of time? And so that's one of the things that, again, we reassure folks that the arrangements that we put into place 100% protect them, and we have their best interest, but we're allowing them to kind of fight back at a system that really is just, you know, taking an arm.
Yeah, this is a very interesting point that you make. I've been on the product side of healthcare for about 35 years, and you could go have a hip surgery this week, get a bill. You go back next month, get the same surgery, the same physician, the same staff, get a completely different bill. This is one of the, what you're touching on is one of the big, big problems with our current acute care healthcare system right now, is that the billing and the function is so complex. It's kind of messy, mm-hmm.
Taking myself out of it is fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, folks, we are.
One quick thing, Linda. Allison put in the text, this might be a good statement to end on. Uh-huh. It says DPC can be integrated into a self-funded plan as long as you have a TPA mm-hmm. that can manage the accumulators. I've seen plan costs cut by 50% when communicated and integrated appropriately.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
You know, because there is so much interest in this, we know who's here. There's a couple of telephone numbers that we got. Put who you are if you want to get any information. There's a lot of stuff in the, a lot of information. We'll send it to you all. We'll follow up with an email. Can we do that, Melissa? Another thing that I think, I have a couple of friends who have been, they've been overlapping on their Medicare mm-hmm. with Concierge, and I would think that this would work excellently for them.
I do that.
Yes, it would.
So anyhow, this has been a great conversation. We can keep it going. We will send out a follow-up. So you'll be receiving a private one on this conversation. And with all of the links that we've got in the chat box, we'll give those to you. And contact information for Dr. Cliff Porter, Neera Patel, and Angel Saucedo. And you can ask them and go from there, okay? Thank you all very much. You'll receive your invitation for the next meeting tomorrow. And then you'll receive my ever faithful email with our calendar in it the day after. Okay? Y'all have a good evening.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Okay.